France is sending a consular official to visit Zacharias Moussaoui. Moussaoui is a French citizen. He's the man the government says was the would-be 20th hijacker of September 11th. And he was the star of yesterday's bizarre hearing in federal court in Alexandria, Virginia. Appearing before Judge Leonie Brinkema, Moussaoui tried to plead guilty and said that he was a member of Al-Qaeda with information about the conspiracy that goes back to 1995. He said he wanted to get onto the penalty phase of his trial and be done with the question of guilt or innocence. Jeffrey Rosen is Associate Professor of Law at George Washington University and also Legal Affairs Editor at the New Republic. Jeffrey Rosen, this was one of two courtroom developments involving Al-Qaeda or the Taliban this week. The other was John Walker Lynn's guilty plea. What do these two cases say to you about war and the criminal law?
Perhaps they remind us about the difficulty of using the ordinary criminal justice system to try terrorists. Remember, there were serious weaknesses in the cases against both Lind and Moussaoui. In Lind, the connection to the death of the CIA officer was not obvious, and in Moussaoui, it's quite a novel legal claim that someone could actually be executed for a conspiracy that may have culminated in a murder that occurred while he was already behind bars. So it's good news for the government in some sense that for very different reasons these two defendants decided to plead guilty. It's an interesting shift, isn't it? The government initially wanted to try everyone in military tribunals. There was an outcry from all the respectable media outlets. The Washington Post and Times said, no, the ordinary justice system is perfectly good enough. Actually, as it turned out, there were dangers for civil liberties and for the government in using ordinary justice. Precedents might have been established. So in some ways, these guilty pleas may have avoided the need for the government to prove its case.
Talk a little bit more about this when you say precedents could have been established. The facts in the Moussaoui case seem to be so unlike any other case one can imagine, it's hard to see what the precedent might be.
The defense bar and many civil libertarians are concerned that if Moussaoui is in fact put to death for a conspiracy in which he may not have had direct participation in the September 11th murder, this precedent could be used to go after low-level drug mules, for example, who may have had a tangential connection with a drug conspiracy. Similarly, in the Lind case, there was a concern that the idea of admitting confessions that were extracted under pretty arduous circumstances might be bad for Miranda law, too.
As you pointed out, unlike John Walker Lind, Mr. Moussaoui was acting as his own counsel. Just how wrong did he get it there? I mean, if you're critiquing what his possibilities were at that hearing and what his prospects are now, how bad is it?
Gosh, his guilty plea is very distressing. He says, I want to prove there's first the reality that you know perfectly well there is a guilt phase and a penalty phase. And basically, I'm saying for the guilt phase, I'm guilty, but for the death penalty, we'll see. He's under the misapprehension that by basically pleading to all the facts, he can then convince the jury that it really wasn't that bad. But the technical standards for mitigation at the death penalty phase are very different. Another mistake that he's made is he may not be able to press either the constitutional challenge against the death penalty for not being applied to someone who wasn't directly involved in the conspiracy, or more interestingly, after the Supreme Court's recent decision saying that the jury independently had to assess each mitigating factor, it's not so obvious that although the government has changed the indictment, that the underlying federal death penalty statute is still constitutional. The final mistake he's made, and the judge was pleading with him on this point, she said, you hold a lot of cards. That's the ability to plead bargain. You may have information that's useful to the government. Why not go and actually trade this plea in exchange for a life sentence? But he chose not to do that either.
She gave him a week to think about it. Okay. Let's say that Mr. Moussaoui comes back next week and says, I plead not guilty. Now that I understand how the two parts of the trial work, I plead not guilty. Is yesterday's statement in court usable against him? Can the prosecution say, he said here in federal court, I plead guilty, I did it, I'm a member of Al-Qaeda, and I'm aware of the conspiracy?
It is, and that led to the remarkable moment yesterday where the judge called the federal marshals to stop him from speaking because, as she told him, anything you say in open court may indeed be used against you. But he hasn't helped himself, and it's not going to be so easy to change his mind again if he happens to do that next week.
A trial obviously has to pass the test of the appellate courts for its verdict to hold. But very highly publicized trials, certainly those publicized worldwide, also have to pass some test of credibility that this is a fair and an intelligent proceeding. Is the Moussaoui case in danger of being perceived as a circus, at least in foreign countries, and therefore a verdict that somehow can be ignored or dismissed?
Well, first of all, I found myself thanking our lucky stars that the thing is not televised. That makes it a little bit less of a circus than it might be. But it's true that the American adversarial system depends centrally on lawyers. The entire system is set up to allow one case to test the other. And when you have this figure parachuting in, acting irrationally by definition, it is not so easy for the system to adapt, even when you have a scrupulous judge who's trying to do her best.
Jeffrey Rosen, thank you for talking with us once again.
Thanks for having me.
Jeffrey Rosen of the George Washington University Law School and also the New Republic.